Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Weekend Worm, a special edition that recaps the top stories of the week. A heads up on what the newsroom is following for the upcoming week. It is the third weekend of May 2026, Saturday the 16th and Sunday the 17th. I'm Carl Lengel, your host. It is a midterm election year, and Montana's primary election is Tuesday, June 2nd. Yellowstone Public Radio and Montana Public Radio are working together to share profiles on candidates running for federal office in 2026. Our broadcast interviews began airing and posting on Monday, April 13th. All of our broadcast interviews are posted on our website at ypradio.org. From the latest National Weather Service discussion on the region's weather, spring system is moving in late Saturday into Sunday, and this system will bring mountain snow with a mix of lower elevation rain and snow Saturday night into Sunday. The winter weather advisory runs from midnight tonight, Saturday to midnight, Sunday night for Big Belt, Bridger, and Castle Mountains East, Glacier Park Region Elkhorn, and Boulder Mountains Little Belt, and Highwood Mountains, Southern Rocky Mountain, Front Upper Blackfoot, and McDonald Pass. The winter weather advisory runs from 5 p.m. this afternoon to 6 a.m. Sunday for Gallatin and Madison County Mountains and Centennial Mountains. Tuesday's near-record heat for mid-May this week eventually gave way to what weather experts are describing as a wintry end-of-week shock to the system. Edward O'Brien has this report.
A potent cold front is expected to sweep into western Montana Wednesday and Thursday. It will moderate temperatures slightly, but introduce two hazards: gusty wind and potentially powerful thunderstorms. Westerly winds of up to 45 miles per hour with isolated higher gusts will push into the region, particularly southwest Montana, by Wednesday evening. Impacts include possible power line damage and elevated fire risk. The thunderstorms could also produce hail and severe downbursts. Those are violent winds that crash to the ground and spread out. Forecasters say areas most at risk will generally be east of McDonald Pass and Georgetown Lake. Starting Wednesday night, rain will then move into the northern two-thirds of western Montana. Several inches of fresh snow are possible in the high country by Thursday morning. The National Weather Service says slushy snow, gusty wind, and highs only in the 40s could leave hikers and campers at risk of hypothermia. Daytime highs in the valleys this weekend will only be in the 50s, with mountain temperatures in the 30s. Lows by Sunday and Monday morning might dip below freezing, which could pose a threat to sensitive vegetation. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
Some Sweetgrass County residents have been evacuated as fire crews work to contain the Gray Fire, burning timber and grass near Gray Cliff along Interstate 90 in south central Montana. A Sweetgrass County Sheriff's Office Facebook post reports residents nearest the 80-acre fire have been evacuated, but there's currently no official evacuation order. The fire started Thursday afternoon. It spread rapidly due to high winds. Fire behavior is expected to remain moderate with limited spotting and tree torching. County officials report smoke will be visible over the next several days, especially due to the fire's closeness to I-90. As of Saturday morning, the Gray Fire is 95 acres and 0% contained. The cause remains unknown. We'll kick off this weekend's Worm with top issue stories, national and international stories, right in our own backyard. And then a fluke of fortune, we'll hear from a variety of our reporters today. In other words, I won't be reading quite as much. Now that's a good Saturday for all of us. An immigration issue is playing out in Montana, and it does have that national spotlight. A federal judge has allowed undocumented immigrant Roberto Orozco Ramirez to be released. Montana Public Radio spoke with Montana PBS reporter Matt Standel this week to learn more.
Matt, the state has been watching this case closely. What happened that led to his release?
So Orozco Ramirez's case is really a culmination of about 5 months of legal proceedings. They were able to successfully argue that Orozco Ramirez just was not given due process rights.
Yeah, we're hearing the way that the federal government processes these cases has changed, and that's coming into play here. Can you tell us more?
Last year, the Trump administration passed a new level of guidance for immigration authorities and federal prosecutors that pretty much put people like Roberto on a lower level of due process rights than they had normally enjoyed. And so the crucial difference here is Roberto was able to be locked up for nearly 5 months because of this sort of nebulous guidance that has no bearing in Congress or the Supreme Court. It's sort of guidance from the Trump administration. And Roberto's lawyers were successfully able to argue that that's illegal, it's wrong, and that's ultimately what allowed him to be freed.
Now, you were there for that reunion. Tell us a little bit what that looked like.
If there's one word I could use to describe when Orozco Ramirez was actually let out of jail after 5 months, it would be relief. His son surprised him. Roberto didn't know that his son would come and be there for when his dad got out of jail. And it was a great emotional moment. There was tears, and they got the heck out of the jail parking lot. They're going back to Freud.
So now that Orozco Ramirez has been reunited with his family and is heading back to Freud, what comes next for him in this case?
Roberto Orozco Ramirez's attorneys tell me that he's still got a long legal battle ahead of him. And we're talking something that might be 2 to 3 years in length.
Well, thank you, Matt. We appreciate this update. Thanks for giving us your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Immigration is, of course, only one of the national heated issues as we approach the midterm elections. How we vote, who votes, those are discussed frequently these days. We had two reports this week on the vote in Montana from reporter Shaley Ragar and Laura Hatch. Let's start with being prepared as a voter from Laura Hatch.
Along with knowing the candidates on the June 2nd ballot, it's helpful to know about the state's election process. AARP Montana has a resource guide on its website with information and deadlines. Tim Summers is AARP Montana's state director.
Knowing the who, what, when, and where to vote can be very, very confusing. And we want to make it as easy as possible for Montanans to participate.
Montana law now requires voters to list their birth year on their ballots. Thousands of ballots were rejected in last November's election because of this, and a lawsuit filed against the legislation is pending in state court. The state also requires Montanans to present a valid ID when voting in person, or provide ID information or a copy of an ID when voting by mail. A lawsuit is also pending against this law, which was passed in 2025, with a trial scheduled to begin this August. Despite the legal action, both laws are in effect for this election. I'm Laura Hatch, reporting.
Mail-in ballots are en route to voters across Montana for those who haven't registered to vote. A judge preserved a later deadline to do so this week. Montana Public Radio's Shaley Ragar filed this report.
Montana has long had Election Day voter registration with an 8 p.m. deadline. A law passed in 2025 changed that cutoff to noon for federal elections and requires counties to offer registration for 8 hours the preceding Saturday. A district court judge blocked that law, maintaining the prior deadline of 8 p.m. on Election Day for June's primary. Late registration must be done in person. The Montana Federation of Public Employees, 4 tribes, and 3 voter advocacy groups sued over the law, arguing it'll disenfranchise voters. The court's order blocks the law until the suit is resolved. Absentee ballots are on their way to voters who've requested them. Voters can track the progress of their ballots online. Another new law requiring voters to include their birth year with their signature is in effect. In Helena, I'm Shaylee Riker.
Public health advocates are breathing a sigh of relief after more than 70 Republicans voted alongside all but 6 Democrats to strip legal immunities for pesticide makers from the new farm bill, which just cleared the U.S. House this week. Eric Galatas with Wyoming Public News Service filed this story midweek.
The provision would have shielded pesticide manufacturers from health-related lawsuits. Jennifer Breon with Food and Water Watch says industrial agriculture's pesticide addiction is poisoning people in Wyoming and across the nation.
Folks certainly don't want to see huge corporations having immunity from any kind of lawsuit that might provide justice to cancer victims.
A recent study found that pesticide residue is likely behind increased rates of lung cancer in non-smokers under age 50 who ate an otherwise healthy diet rich in fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. The new farm bill comes on the heels of recent Supreme Court oral arguments in Monsanto Company versus Durnell, which is expected to determine if a company can be held liable for failing to warn consumers about cancer risks linked to the weed killer Roundup. I'm Eric Galatas.
State Attorney General Austin Knutson is demanding federal regulators take a close look at one of the largest AI companies in the world before it hits the stock market. Montana Public Radio's Austin Amestoy filed this report.
In a letter joined by 9 other Republican attorneys general, Knutson says OpenAI CEO Sam Altman's leadership of the company may put Montana's public investment accounts at risk. Reuters reported last year the colossal tech firm is aiming to go public with a $1 trillion value. That would be one of the largest initial public offerings ever. Knutson says Altman has a history of, quote, self-dealing and undisclosed conflicts of interest, end quote, that could put markets at risk. The attorney general adds Montana's pension funds for teachers, police officers, and other public servants are invested in public markets and may be impacted if OpenAI isn't intently scrutinized. Companies need to receive approval from the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission before stocks can be bought and sold on public markets. In Missoula, I'm Austin Amestoy.
Early this week, we heard from Kay Erickson. Riverstone Health and Montana Department of Health and Human Services are working with a Billings hotel after an outbreak of Legionella.
Several guests at Howard Johnson, a hotel in Billings, reported getting sick with a Legionella-related illness within the past year, according to a news release from Riverstone Health. Legionella, commonly referred to as Legionnaire's disease, is a type of pneumonia caused by inhaling bacteria and water vapor from water systems like hot water heaters, storage tanks, and pipes where water may sit for long periods of time. In response to the reports of illness, Riverstone Health tested water samples in April and detected Legionella bacteria in a majority of the water samples from the hotel. Symptoms typically occur 2 to 14 days after exposure, says Riverstone Health's epidemiologist Taylor Cook.
And you do have about a 95% chance of becoming hospitalized once you're ill. Your hospitalization can really vary depending on whether or not you have pre-existing conditions like lung issues or cancer or anything like that.
Cook says they're working with hotel management and a contractor in the cleanup of the water systems.
So over the course of 2 weeks, they'll be flushing chemicals through the water. And during that 2 weeks, it is safe for people to use the water. You just might notice a smell or taste in the water.
Riverstone Health has given Howard Johnson notification letters and fact sheets to give to all current and future guests about potential risks. Anyone with symptoms within 30 days of their stay, seek medical attention. In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
Researchers are learning more about pesticides that are leaching into Montana's waterways. They're finding that streams and rivers in urban areas might be more impacted than waters near farm fields. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
Under a bridge near downtown Whitefish, Paige Weigand is wading into the Stillwater River. She's with the Flathead Lake Biological Station and is here to collect water that will be tested for pesticides. Weigand plunges an amber glass bottle into the turquoise water.
Try to hold it up in the middle of the water column. Wait till it fills.
This is the second year of water sampling. Rachel Mallison is one of the researchers analyzing the data. The 600 samples taken from Butte to the Flathead last year did contain low levels of mostly herbicides.
So we're getting detections from April all the way into November. Even though the pesticides aren't being really sprayed in November, they're still in the water.
Mallison's team has identified hotspots throughout northwest Montana. Those sites either had more frequent detections or higher concentrations.
I believe 5 out of 6 of those hotspot sites were all downstream of urban suburban areas. Only one was downstream of and predominantly agricultural use area.
That shows pesticide runoff is coming from a variety of sources. People spraying lawns or industrial uses, not just farm fields. Mallison says until now, there's been very little data on how much pesticides are leaching into waters and where those chemicals are coming from. As an ecologist, she's mostly worried about impacts on fish, plants, and insects. Most detections were below what's considered harmful to people, but Mallison thinks Montanans should know what they're being exposed to.
Because it's really hard to know all the effects.
Mallison says the biological station will be sharing its findings with communities. Her team also plans to work with people interested in reducing their pesticide use. In Whitefish, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Chronic wasting disease continues to spread across Wyoming's deer and elk herds. New data from Wyoming Game and Fish shows the disease was detected in several new hunting areas last year. Wyoming Public Radio's Aralise Wallace has this report.
The Game and Fish Department's Wildlife Health Laboratory tested more than 5,300 samples in 2025. The results found new detections in 3 deer and 6 elk hunt areas. Jessica Jennings is the lab manager.
As far as deer, 35 of our 37 mule deer herds have had CWD detected. And in elk, 24 of our 34 elk herds have had CWD detected.
Jennings says the CWD is a slow-moving neurological disease that affects deer, elk, moose, and other cervids. There have been no confirmed cases of transmission to humans, but state officials encourage hunters to test harvested animals and avoid consuming infected meat. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Aralise Wallace.
On a lighter note, Kayla DeRoche filed a report on a magician and comedian who went viral on social media for her improv. She's coming to Montana this weekend.
Canadian entertainer Carissa Hendricks performs a magic act in a ball gown and red updo as her Golden Age of Hollywood persona, Lucy Darling. Crowd work is a big part of it, like in these clips from her YouTube channel.
What's your name, my love?
Ray.
Ray! Like a ray of sunshine. Ray, darling, what do you do?
Finance.
Oh, see, we ruined it. Lisa, what do you do?
I'm a pharmacy technician.
You're a drug dealer!
In 2024, Hendricks and her audience interactions went viral on platforms like TikTok, where she now has almost 2 million followers.
Always been transformative.
Hendricks says she noticed a community growing along with the popularity of Lucy Darling.
And the most interesting thing started to become the comment sections in every video. So, you know, basically I would do a little 1 minute, 2 minute scene, and then the audience would build on that.
She says audience members now go out of their way to sit up front and participate.
And more, they've got these bits, you know, and they're not overpowering, they're not pre-planned. They are truly strong improvisers who can, like, meet me where I'm at and build the scene, and it's become such a much better experience.
Hendricks is performing in Missoula Saturday. In Billings, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
We'll be right back. Finally, stories we heard this week that promise future follow-ups include population growth. All but one of Montana's seven largest cities added new residents last year. That's according to data released by the U.S. Census Bureau Thursday. Billings, the state's largest city, lost about 200 residents. Meanwhile, Kalispell added more than 600, a 2% increase in population in a single year. Helena, Bozeman, Missoula, Great Falls, and Butte all experienced positive growth as well. Montana's electric utility regulators are censuring one of their own following allegations of misconduct. An independent report the Public Service Commission adopted last week sums up a year of allegations against Commissioner Brad Molnar, including accusations of hostile behavior, inappropriate comments, and retaliation. Molnar is one of five elected commissioners who set rates for electric utilities with captive customer bases like Northwestern Energy. Molnar took his seat representing South Central Montana in January 2025. He since accrued seven different complaints from co-workers. Molnar retained a lawyer and continues to deny allegations. The PSC has a history of discord behind the scenes. A financial audit in 2021 detailed infighting and misuse of public dollars. YPR reached out to both Molnar and the PSC's executive director. We did not hear back by the deadline for this story. Molnar successfully filed a lawsuit to participate in hearings reviewing the merger between utilities Northwestern Energy and Black Hills in person, despite previous directions to work remotely. Those hearings are ongoing. A disease outbreak significantly reduced wolf numbers in Wyoming and Yellowstone National Park last year. Biologists report the lowest wolf population in 20 years, with canine distemper as the likely cause. This virus is especially lethal to wolf pups, with only 37% surviving the year. The outbreak affected 64% of wolves in northwestern Wyoming. Despite past outbreaks occurring when populations were high, this one happened with lower numbers, prompting further investigation. Wyoming's wolf population fell by 23%, with a 42% drop in breeding pairs. Officials remain hopeful for recovery, citing increased resistance among surviving wolves. That's the Weekend Worm for this third weekend of May 2026. We'll have another episode of The Worm on Monday, and we'll keep that weekend edition coming too. I'm Carl Lengel. Have a great weekend.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal Art Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.